Hey, this is James Arnold Taylor, voice actor, the voice of
Yabba-dabba-doo, Fred Flintstone,
Johnny Test, who's 11 years old and totally awesome,
Ratchet from Ratchet and Clank, Tidus from Final Fantasy X, oh yes, and of course, Obi-Wan Kenobi. It wouldn't be coffee with Kenobi without yours truly. The Force is strong here indeed.
Previously on Coffee with Kenobi.
Fortunately, we only have time for one more, perhaps a few honorable mentions. So, Holly, the floor is yours. What is your fifth one?
Come on, it's so predictable. Anybody who has spent 42 seconds with me knows. It's Greedo!
Yeah, here it is.
Greedo is my favorite thing. I have an altar to Greedo in my house. I love Greedo.
Rancho Greedo.
Yes.
This is James Arnold Taylor, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi. I have a good feeling about this.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to show number 143 of Coffee with Kenobi, your spoiler-free place for Star Wars discussion, analysis, rhetoric, and the best travel tips this side of the galaxy. I'm your host, Dan Z, drinking One Nation coffee out of a black and orange Rancho Obi-Wan coffee mug. I will be attending the Rancho Obi-Wan Gala on October 20th. I am very excited. It'll be my third trip there, and I can't wait to bring you the latest images, news, and conversations with the great folks that will be there. I certainly hope that you will be among them. Joining me today for a cup of coffee are Scott Kalura and Tom Gross as we talk about the five things we love about The Empire Strikes Back. The feedback last week was great for A New Hope. And of course, we've got to keep the train rolling. In our news segment, we'll have a brief one where we talk about the latest Resistance trailer, but it's going to be all The Empire Strikes Back. So pull up a chair, grab your favorite coffee mug, and let's have some coffee with Kenobi.
And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
So before we jump into the main show and start talking about the things we love about The Empire Strikes Back, news just broke at the time I was going to release the show, so I'm inserting this at the beginning to address what undoubtedly will be on your hearts and minds as we progress over the next week. It was officially announced via Vanity Fair that Disney is slowing down its Star Wars plans. I'm going to read you the exact story that we have here, and then we'll talk about it. It says, it's official. Disney is slowing down its Star Wars plans, at least where movies are concerned. And then it goes on to say that Solo was, quote, their first real flop, prompting some critics to wonder if Disney's current model of releasing one Star Wars film per year might be due for reconsideration. And then we go down, and this is what it says. Iger told Hollywood Reporter that he took responsibility for the rapid pace in Star Wars film production and called that early strategy a mistake. Now Iger believes the company did a little too much too fast, and he is quoted as saying that. He also is quoted as saying, you can expect some slowdown, but that doesn't mean we're not going to make films. He pointed to J.J. Abrams' continued work on Episode 9 and the Game of Thrones creator's upcoming Star Wars saga as examples of films still in the works, so that's a good thing. This jives with early reports that further anthology films, such as that rumored but unannounced Obi-Wan film, were going to get the axe, and that's the quote from Vanity Fair. Then, he makes no comments on Disney's TV plans, so that is interesting. And here's what he does say about the films. We are just at the point where we're going to start making decisions about what comes next after Episode 9. But I think we're going to be a little bit more careful about volume and timing. And the buck stops here on that. So that's the only news we actually have. Anything else you hear is just speculation or whatever. And that's fine. We're going to have a lot of discussion about it. We're discussing it right now. For me, this is a good thing. I think that less is more. I think that the main challenge that Solo ran into, and I've said this many times, is that it came out too soon. And that's because Star Wars films, yes, Marvel does it, but Marvel does it differently. Star Wars has a very different history, a different tradition involved, and less is more. These films are epic, and epics are something that you have to kind of break down and then build up again because they're so intense and so involved and so exciting that you want it to maintain its event quality and status. And this is for me. That's what I think. I like the wait. I like the anticipation. And when they're so close together, it's just not the same. It wasn't the same for me watching Solo as it was for The Last Jedi. And I went to the world premiere, and I got to go to the cast after party. And I was very lucky and had a ball, and it was great. And I really love Solo. But it's not the same as that wait. If you're not sure about that, just look at what happened before The Force Awakens. That was a long wait between Star Wars films. And boy, the results were amazing. And I don't think the quality of Solo suffered from anything. I think the movie was great. I think it was well made. I think the change in directorialship didn't affect the final product because you couldn't even tell, I don't think. I thought it was very strong. But again, that is how I ingested this film. You may have a different reaction, and that's awesome too. Let me know. I'd be happy to share it on the show. But this is not something I think is a panic. I think this is good. This is quality control. They want to make sure that they pace these things out and that they are major events, as they should be. This is Star Wars we're talking about. Star Wars is a major franchise in film, in books, in television, and comic books. And when you have something that is epic like that, it's much more powerful to me when there's a little bit of a lull between, because you have time to get excited and analyze what you just saw and then get hyped for the next one. I mean, think about Celebration. Celebrations don't happen every year. And look at how thrilled we are about them. I think this is a good thing. So to me personally, I think this is cause for celebration and anticipation of what's to come. So now, let's move on to the show.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first.
Joining us today for a cup of coffee is the executive editor at IGN and the co-host of the Star Trek podcast, Transporter Room 3. Please welcome me in joining Scott Calora.
Hello.
Hello, Scott. Boy, it is super cool. We were just chatting. It's one of the best parts about this show is the pre and post conversations I get to have with these fantastic people. Scott and I have been, I don't know how long it's been, but we've been working together for a while on some fun stuff with IGN, often Star Wars related. So it's great to actually talk to you, not face to face, but, you know, internet to internet. How about
that? That's practically face to face these days, right?
It's exactly right.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, my goodness. A pleasure. Long time coming. We're very much looking forward to this. And based on what you tweet, that this is a perfect topic for you, I would say.
Yes. You're referring to my Empire Strikes Back tweets, I guess, right?
That is exactly right. That is exactly right. And we will definitely get into that. Before we do, let's bring in our other co-host. You know him, you love him. He's your CWK newsman, Mr. Tom Gross.
Oh, hello, everybody. It's wonderful to be here. Good night for a conversation.
Oh, absolutely. It sure is. Tonight is our top five things we love about The Empire Strikes Back. Last week, we had Holly Fry on, and we had Nick DeCalvano. We talked about the top five things we loved about Star Wars and New Hope. And your feedback has been tremendous. I love hearing some of your thoughts on what you love about Star Wars. And just like we did last week, we can talk about scenes. We can talk about characters. We can talk about moments. We can talk about feelings about this movie. I think, and you know, Scott, I'm not quite sure where you stand on this, although I have a pretty good guess. I can honestly say, as for many people in my age bracket, The Empire Strikes Back is my favorite Star Wars film. What about you guys? Same?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think I was at the perfect age when it came out. And, you know, I guess I was, not to give too much info out, but I guess I was, must have been 11 or 12 when it came out. No, 10 or 11, I guess. And it was just, you know, one of those things where I saw it, you know, 15 times in the theater that summer or something crazy, you know, and it's one that I've never stopped loving. Some of them you love when you first see them, and then maybe you kind of you pick them apart a little bit as time passes. But Empire has just always remained perfect as far as I can tell. I never pick that one apart, no matter how many times I've seen it.
Oh, I agree. It's probably about the closest you'll get to a perfect Star Wars film, I think.
Yeah, totally.
It is the movie that makes me say, every time I see a brand new Star Wars movie, I always hesitate to say, this is the best, because Empire's always sitting there on the shelf looking at me, making me say, it's in the top five. I know Empire is always, and you know what? I watched it again for this, for our conversation tonight. I watched it over the last weekend, and I look at this film and I say, this one is above all others in my eyes. And Scott, we must be very similar in age, because I was that 10, 11 year old as well. And so, it is by far my favorite movie. And I can say that after, you know, after loving how many movies have we watched and loved, and this one still is always at the top of my list?
Yeah, it's true. It really is true. It's just, it's something else. And it's sort of like Empire and Godfather 2 are the two sequels that are always everyone wants to compare their sequels to. Well, this is what we were hoping to, you know, we're aspiring to be, you know. Oh, and I guess The Dark Knight maybe as well is kind of people reference, right? Those are the sequels that you need to try to at least aspire to match if you can ever actually hope to match them. And Empire is, yeah, I mean, it's just... Well, it wasn't the first one, actually. It's Godfather 2 came first. But yeah, I mean, it's...
But those are the par d'excellence. I mean, that. I mean, even exactly. I'd even feel comfortable throwing Toy Story 2 in there. I mean, it's not the same narrative weight. But it's not often that a sequel will surpass the narrative vision of the original film. Exactly. Or at least equal it. I don't know if anything can pass The Godfather. But you know what I mean? It certainly gets there because it's pretty rare for you to be able to say that. The Empire Strikes Back... means so much to me. I won't say it's my favorite film because that's Raiders of the Lost Ark, but Empire's probably my second favorite film.
I was just talking to someone the other day, about a friend of mine who is, you know, same deal. He loves the stuff like we do. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's crazy when you read about the making of Empire, because Lucas was working on Empire. He was developing Raiders, and he was also working on getting more American Graffiti going, which isn't a movie people talk about that much these days, but like, you don't think of the Lucas and his output in those terms nowadays necessarily, but like the guy was juggling a lot of balls at the time, aside from also building his empire, you know, like literally building, like, you know, Skywalker Ranch and all that stuff. But like, just to the fact that Empire and Raiders both came out of that same sort of period is just, it's really mind boggling.
Oh, he was like Kevin Feige and J.J. Abrams and, you know, insert clever person here all in one. I mean, he really is a pioneer. You're so right on for that. Let's jump in. I am so excited. I could hear you two talk about just your love of Empire and be happy as can be. But we need to kick this thing off. And Scott, I'm going to toss the tauntaun reins over to you. What's your first one that you have on your list?
Well, let me ask you how, like, first of all, are these ranked, or is it just five things? Or
it's just any five. You know, they don't have to be best to worst, or is there such a thing as worst with Empire? But yeah, just the five that you have.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with C-3PO, actually, which maybe isn't a super popular choice. I don't know, but I love C-3PO in this movie so much, and. You know, people,
I don't disagree. I love him in this too. This is the ultimate 3PO.
Yeah, sometimes people rag on 3PO, but like he's great, and I love that they separate him and R2 for a good chunk of the movie, which, you know, they kind of were separated a little bit in A New Hope, but not in this film. They're really gone for, like, they're really apart for a big chunk of it, and they have to find their own way and do their own thing, kind of. And I just love 3PO, he's comic relief, but he's also like, sometimes he's the voice of reason, and he can kind of get drowned out in all the activity sometimes. But like when you've rewatched the movie 100 times, it's like when they're going through the asteroid field, for example, and like Han's like, you know, we need to get closer to one of the big ones, and you just hear 3PO in the background. He's like, closer. And, you know, yeah. We might get pulverized if we stay out here much longer. Pulverized, you know, like he's like this, like, you know, cyborg, or this, like, you know, android Greek chorus or something. I don't know, but like, I just love him, and I mean, I get a kick out of just watching what he's doing. He might not be the focus of the scene or the shot. I just love watching him. Not to go on too long about 3PO, but just like even in, like when Leia kisses Luke in the sick bay. And then you see Han's reaction. You see 3PO silently watching the whole thing and cocking his head and like turning and looking at Luke, looking at Han, looking at, you know, it's like, it's just, he says so much, but just the Anthony Daniels body language. It's just, I just love him so much.
I just don't understand human behavior. You can hear him. You can hear him thinking that.
Exactly.
That's a dynamic start. I, you know what? I've always thought that I've loved C-3PO was the very first Star Wars collectible I ever got. It's the first action figure I ever got, period. I had that figure before I even saw the original Star Wars. I was seven when Empire came out, by the way. It's nice to be the youngest person in the
world. Yeah, how about that?
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that figure like in the catalogs or whatever, and it was like there was something about the shiny gold finish to it. It's like you just wanted that one so badly. Yeah.
And it was so mysterious and great. And he's kind of like he's not necessarily the muse of the Empire Strikes Back, but he's certainly sort of like the focal point for the skeptic in the crowd. But you also can empathize with him too, which is pretty amazing that you can do that. And I always felt like the prequels, he became kind of caricature of the great things he is in The Empire Strikes Back.
See, yeah. And I think C-3PO, and Scott, you'd said this a couple times. I love the way that he's the foil to Han Solo and makes Han seem even more reckless in several instances. But then I think that also turns and makes Han look more heroic, because things tend to work out for Han Solo in this movie, even though he has all sorts of obstacles to overcome. But so C-3PO is what makes Han seem even more heroic in my eyes.
That's true. Although, of course, ultimately 3PO is he kind of is proven right, I guess, in the end, right? Because Han, finally does run out of luck at Cloud City. So of course 3PO runs out of luck as well, though, doesn't he, at Cloud City? So.
Yeah, he really falls to pieces, doesn't he?
But you're absolutely right. Yeah, he does make Han look good.
That's a good call. Wow, I never really dreamed until this conversation legitimately that we could have a whole show about 3PO. But I would be so, I mean, this is good. That's totally good. I love this. This is cool. Man, this is just our first one. We got, oh boy. Yeah, that's a good one, Scott.
We'll talk about when he ascends to godhood in Return of the Jedi.
Literally and figuratively. I just showed that movie to my five-year-old for the first time, and he had a lot of questions. All right, closer. Sorry. All right, go ahead, Tom. Your first one.
Oh man. Well, first I want to say, Scott, your first one just makes me feel so much more comfortable about this conversation, because when you watch this film, I kept thinking, I'm limited to five.
I know. I know.
So between the three of us, I have no doubt we're going to cover all the great stuff in Empire Strikes Back. So I'm going to stick with a similar topic and go with a character and say the Millennium Falcon is going is where I want to start on this one. Sorry, Dan, I had to do that. and this is what I love. And when I sat down to prepare for this, I was really debating how I want to approach watching this movie. And it didn't matter how I walked into it, because what I tried to do was filter it through my 10-year-old eyes and really look at what strikes me, or what I remember striking me as the 10-year-old. Now, as we've established, that was a long time ago. And so there were several times and moments where like Solo would creep in, or what I know of, the prequels, or going further into, here or there. So when I talk about the Millennium Falcon, the thing I love, this is the movie where I really fell in love with the Millennium Falcon. And what I loved about it was how beat up this thing is the entire film. And now I feel like the comic series is sort of giving us an impression of how it got into the state it got into. And that's probably a conversation for another day. But I love the way that they're always tinkering, they're always fidgeting. And Han gets so frustrated with Chewie several times about, oh, don't do that, do this. And we were going to get out of here, put that back together. And it's just, to me, the Falcon is sort of the tool that builds their relationship in this film. And then constantly under repair. And I feel like they're always on the run in the Falcon. And it just, when we talk about it having a mind of its own, at the worst moments, it's like kicking back saying, no, I'm not going to go now. We're going to deal with this or whatever. And I'm not going into light speed. You're going to have to face this. And I love the way that the Millennium Falcon makes Han, I don't know if it makes him or if it shows us how cunning he can be. For example, the best, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not a heist, but the best move he pulls on the Empire is when he turns to attack from a position and he flies right at the bridge and disappears.
Yeah.
And ends up on the back of
Star Destroyer.
Yeah. End of the back of the Star Destroyer and just fools everybody and impresses Leia.
Yeah. He has his moments. Yeah.
Not many, but he's got them.
Yeah. And without the Falcon, I don't think he could have done any of that without the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, I love the Falcon. It's like, like what you're saying about Chewie and Han's kind of, you know, the way their relationship is almost tied to the ship. It's almost like they're sort of, I don't know, like are they sort of parents to the thing in a way? Like they both are having to constantly nurse it and take care of it, and they're disagreeing about it at times, like you say, and. You know, it's like gets them into all kinds of heaps of trouble, but they would never abandon it either. It's I love this thing
like,
so much.
It's like their dog.
yeah, that's good. That's even better.
Yeah, which makes more sense.
Except it lives a lot longer than a dog.
It's true.
Yeah. It's true. And then the last thing I'll say about the Falcon is when you switch lenses to the Solo movie, when Lando walks out on Cloud City and looks at the Falcon, I could not help but see a brand new look in Billy Dee Williams' face as Lando looking at that and just commenting to Chewie, "You're still with this guy. Hey, that's my ship." I saw so much new in watching that now after Solo.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. I'm really proud of myself. I didn't even need to mute my microphone to tell you how much I don't think the Falcon is a character, but we'll just save that for another time.
Ben had.
That was very passive aggressive. Yeah. All right. Okay. So my first one.
I stumbled into something here that I don't really want to get involved in, I guess.
Oh, no. It's fun. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. Okay. So my first one is Hoth. And I know that's a bit of a cheat because that's rather all-encompassing. But I realized something a few weeks ago when we were doing our top five things that said Star Wars to us. And it was something Jeff McGee said about when he was a kid. I grew up in Louisiana where it doesn't snow. It's very, very warm, almost year-round. And so around about 2 or 3 years before we moved to Central Illinois, that was like the first time I ever saw snow. And it was right after I saw The Empire Strikes Back. So I think there's like a connection there, which is this mystical, amazing quality that snow is compared to, you know, I mean, I'm not Luke. I didn't come from Tatooine, but I came from a very warm place. So for Luke, it's very, very different. It's a different atmosphere. It's a different environment from A New Hope. There's very much a juxtaposition of this kid that goes to this completely new place. And when he goes, we've got Tauntauns. We've got snow speeders. We've got this wonderful garb that Luke and Han are wearing, the probe droid, you know, landing on the surface with that wonderful boom that sounds great and surround sound. And then, of course, AT-ATs. Now, I realize that's a lot in one, but Hoth is my favorite planet, my favorite scene in any Star Wars film, because it's just got so much there. There's so much for your imagination. And as a kid, and even today, not today, but because it's September, but every time there's snow out and I'm walking outside and there's a little bit of give when you're walking through the snow, I think of Luke walking towards the spirit of Obi-Wan Kenobi, and not because I'm about to pass out in the snow, but just because it brings you back to that place when you were a kid.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Hoth is great. It's awesome. Well, it was after the you know, amazingness of the first movie, you're finally seeing the bigger Star Wars universe as well. Right. So
that's right.
And it was, as you say, it was so different, and there's so much cool stuff. Are we allowed to curse on this podcast? I don't know.
This is a family show, Scott.
Okay. So much cool stuff on that podcast.
So much cool Banta Poodoo, I guess.
Yeah. So much cool Banta Poodoo, that happens there. I mean, now are we not allowed to say AT-ATs as one of our favorites because you just,
no, you can, because okay. You have a different lens to kind of explain.
Okay.
It,
okay. For sure. Right.
Yeah. I love your perspective, Dan. And I that's something I've never ever thought of is for you growing up in Louisiana, that how much of an impact a snow planet would have. And that's really cool. And I love Hoth too. And actually that was going to be my honorable mention, Hoth. So I don't consider that a cop out at all, because it is such a great,
there's so much to it.
It's a great setting. And like you said, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I remember when I first, this was before I realized how much I loathe spoilers, but I was reading the novel to The Empire Strikes Back, and I got to the beginning of the AT-AT scene, and I remember exactly where I was sitting. And my mom came outside. I was sitting outside in the backyard, and she said, "Hey, you know that book you're reading? Do you want to go see that movie?" And I was like, "Oh, we can go see that movie?" And I was just beyond thrilled. And I remember just beat for beat and reading the novel. I think that was it Leia Brackett that wrote the novel for The Empire Strikes Back, I believe? Or she wrote
she wrote the first draft of the script.
The first draft of the script. But
it was, I can't remember who wrote it now. Mm. Should know
I haven't,
that.
Let's see. I have it over on my shelf. While you guys are chatting, I'll peek around over my shoulder. Okay. but
yeah, that, Dean Foster maybe? Or?
No, he did The Force Awakens. Yeah.
He did splinters of them. Well, we're going astray here, but we're still on our number one picks.
We're still on our number one picks. Yeah. We've only been talking for 3 hours, so that's not bad. All right, Scott, what is your second one?
Can I say Irvin Kershner?
Of course.
Irvin Kershner. Because you don't realize this, you know, when you're a kid and you're first seeing it, but like, when you look at it now, it's like, well, he really did bring so much to the world, and he really expanded just the style of it. I remember in college, we were back on a Star Wars kick at one point. We were watching all the movies, and like, I remember still clearly, like, just we're talking about it, and I'm like, yeah, you know, Irvin Kershner, like, you know, Empire Strikes Back is so stylish because of him. And this girl who, for some reason, was always just so mean to me, was like, oh, stylish like your hair. But it was like a total diss, you know? And like, I still remember being so traumatized by that. But I stand by it. Like, the Empire has a style that A New Hope did not have. It has like a scope to it. It just, every shot is framed so beautifully. And, you know, George Lucas is obviously a genius, and I love him. But like, he did not have the same eye that Kershner had. And Kershner also, of course, was benefiting from the success of the first movie and the built world that Lucas had already built. But I just think that Kershner, if it wasn't for him, Empire wouldn't be what we think of it now. You know, it could have just been like a little bit more of a kind of return to the world of A New Hope instead of the expansion of it. And I always wondered what it would have been like if we had got to see him come back to do Return of the Jedi. Of course, that's not how it panned out, but it's almost in a way better, I guess, because Empire just stands alone in a way. It's like the one that he did, and it's special because of that.
That's a wonderful call. I don't know why I didn't think of when we do these, like, people bring up the directors. I'm like, yeah, of course, because that's their vision, right? It was Donald Glut, by the way, who wrote Empire Strikes Back.
Ah, okay. I would not have remembered that.
Yeah, it's a very unique name. Says the guy with the last name Zare. Yeah. No, that's a wonderful call. Tom, what's your second one?
Yeah. I'm going to build off of the Irvin Kershner because one of my favorite shots of this is of this character, Darth Vader, is my number two. And it's his first appearance, which I didn't time it. And I always wonder how much time has passed when this happens. But, you know, we have the whole Hoth scene where with the probe droid and the Wampa and Obi-Wan Kenobi, all of this movie happens without seeing the main villain once. I mean, we see the opening with the Star Destroyer sending out the probe droids, but Darth Vader doesn't appear at all. And the first shot we get of him is the back of his helmet, shiny, powerful, looking out the window of the bridge at his galaxy with the ships and other Star Destroyers. And it's such a beautiful, beautiful shot that just emits. And it's like, oh yeah, we've got this to deal with. It's how I felt when I saw that. And it's so much. And I just think back, to those days when there was so much we didn't know. And we didn't, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And so every little thing that happens is like, oh, that is cool. The meditation chamber. And when the general, and I forget which general or admiral walks in and the helmet's coming down and you're like, whoa. Yeah. And you're like, no, we're not supposed to see that. Yeah. And he turns around in there and all of the firsts with Vader. It's just, he is so brutal in this second one. He's killing guys left and right. I mean, in his first scene, he's murdering someone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a shock. You know, we see him choke someone in A New Hope, and we see the lightsaber duel, and he seems angry and all that, and he's menacing. But Empire Strikes Back, I felt like moved it to the next level. And in fact, I seem to remember my parents having a conversation about Vader's violence in the next room. Someone took me, I forget who took me, if it was my mom or my dad, but one of them saying something along the lines of that he was really brutal in that. That was really that. And I was thinking, he was. That was so awesome. as I'm playing with my little scoping saber, Vader going.
By the way, it's 20 minutes and 15 seconds into the film when Vader finally appears in that shot that you mentioned.
Right? I knew it was significant.
Yeah. Which is, that's a long time. Mm-hmm. That's a long time to go without seeing him. So,
that's actually a perfect segue into my next one. And that is the risks that The Empire Strikes Back took. That what you just said is a nice sort of example of that. But ultimately the risk was having a cliffhanger ending where the bad guys win. Yeah. That's extremely rare. It's extremely rare in 1980. It's extremely rare in 2018, where it's not some sort of a cheap gimmick. This wasn't a gimmick. This was a full circle narrative. And honestly, there's only two other examples I can think of where when the ending happens, I'm not even talking about Honor Your Father. I'm talking just about the fact that Luke is very much injured emotionally and physically. He's become disformed or disfigured, I guess, is a better way to say, because he lost his hand. The Han Solo is gone. You don't know where he's going to go. And it's just over. And there's a little bit of hope because they get back in their white garb and they're looking out into the distance, although they're looking into blackness as opposed to looking into a sky showing up casing hope. And it was just so brave. And of course, there was a 3-year gap. I can't imagine a movie being made of this kind of epic magnitude where we had to wait 3 years where people would A, not try to spoil it, and B, would still be completely dramatically invested because there was such a long wait. It was so powerful. Every time we would go back to see The Empire Strikes Back, and like the both of you, I went back and saw it repeatedly, you know, for those 3 years. My brother would say to me, and he's younger than me, he would always say, is this where they free Han Solo? Is this where Han Solo gets out of the carbonite? And I would say, no, this is still the same movie where he's going to get frozen in carbonite. It was just very, very powerful. And I just think it's a masterstroke, and it's very, 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 very brave of Kirshner, of Lucas. It's just, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, still. For sure. Yeah, I think you're right, Dan. I think nowadays that it just doesn't happen, right? You don't go 3 years to find out the resolution to the story. It just wouldn't happen. And that cliffhanger would not get made, or the sequel would be one like a Back to the Future deal or something where you get it 6 months later. Or,
yeah.
It boggles the mind to think that we were waiting. We're all old enough to have been waiting for that, for Return of the Jedi. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what we did for those 3 years.
I know. We watched Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back on beta. At least that's what I did.
Yeah, but it wasn't even like it is nowadays, right? Where you had you could easily get the films, right? I mean, I don't think when Empire came out that I had a VHS player even. I guess you were lucky to have beta.
Oh, yeah. That was like the big thing. And I know I've told this story before too, and I'll do it real quickly before we get to our break. But I think my allowance was like $1 a week or something crazy like that. But, you know, it was in the mid 70s. And we went to this video store and they said, okay, to join our video club and get a different beta movie every week, it costs $100 for the year, which now seems crazy, right?
so I could join this club for $100 and get any movie in the store, including Star Wars, or I could buy Star Wars because they were not priced to purchase. They were priced to rent.
Right.
Or you could buy Star Wars for $100.
Right.
Well, like any self-respecting young person, I said, well, let's just buy Star Wars. I don't care about these other movies in there. That didn't fly. But I did eventually get it. And so that's pretty much how we killed our time. So speaking of time, we have taken a very long time to get through these first two. But I would wager to say, if this is a harbinger of what's to come, this show's only going to get better. So stick around. We will take our first break and come back and give our next two top five things we love about The Empire Strikes Back. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi. Oh, pass the cream, would you?
I need to take a quick second and thank the wonderful people from our Coffee with Kenobi Patreon family that have been so much about helping our show and adding to it and supporting us, really. It's been great. And I want to thank Ben Elkington, Rebecca Raven, Dennis Keithley, Terry Lee, Melinda Wolf, Wayne Booker, Aaron Harris, Chris Gavarka, Angela Sauce, Mediocre Jedi, Brad Tracy, Phil Picaro, Tim Bungaroth, Chris Metz, LJ Souter, Thea Selby, Jeff Ellis, Daz Davies, Christian Dale, Jason Hall, Brian McKinney, Connie Shee, Mike Audette, Jared Cantor, BJ Smith, Eric Struthers, Nick Deco, and Mark Suter. It's been amazing having you all as a part of our Coffee with Kenobi family. None of this stuff happens without you, and we really appreciate it so much. And oh, by the way, we just got a new one, Brad Tracy. Thank you, Brad, for being a member of the Coffee with Kenobi family. When you are a member of the Coffee with Kenobi family, the biggest thing that you have is you have access to our exclusive show, CWK Pour Over, which you can listen to for $5 or more a month. And we have 23 different shows out there now. They come out every Sunday. They're about a half hour long. We talk about Star Wars. We talk about geek topics. We delve deeply into our lives and how these geek topics impact our families. And it's really, really a great blast to record. The feedback is amazing. And I'm going to share with you a recent clip from our latest show.
Pour Over here on Patreon, our exclusive show that we put out just for you guys, for your contributions to our show. We really thank you very much for that. I'm your host, Corey Club, this week, and we're talking today again with two of my best friends. We'll start with my good old friend, Dan Zare.
Hey, how y'all doing, everybody?
I knew I had a feeling you would do something like that.
Something country westernish.
And, yeah, what's the background on that one?
That one is something where I said, how you doing, everybody? And I just mm-hmm. found to be weird. That's really the whole background.
Be weird was the idea.
Being weird was the idea. You know, when I was in grade school, I was the vice president of the weird club. I always felt a little cheated.
Oh, my
God. I wasn't the president. This is a true story.
This show starts off with a bang. Wow.
It does.
I'm loving it.
It does. And you had such a nice intro where you talked about your best buddies, and then I had to.
This is going to be one we're not going to forget, I think.
It's going to be a hoot.
Anyway, the other person you hear laughing out loud here with us is another good friend of ours, Tom Gross.
Oh, hello, hello, hello.
Were you part of any secret clubs at all in high school, grade school?
Thank you, sir. I have another.
Yeah, neighborhood clubs that...
Oh, my gosh. No, I don't think so. No. No, I can't top the vice, you could not make president of weird club.
Come on. I know. I mean, personally, I think it was rigged. He wouldn't.
He's running on a bad platform, I think.
He wouldn't surrender the throne, if you will.
So I know that one sounds crazy, but I put that in there so you could hear how much fun we have, how hard we laugh. And those are just sincere moments where we just kind of catch each other off guard and bring in all kinds of crazy stuff. But it's fun. And if you've heard the show, and many of you have over the past 5 years, you have grown to love the chemistry that I love so much with these two awesome guys, Corey and Tom. So be sure to listen to the new one. Plus, we go into a lot of depth about Dungeons & Dragons and Corey's first legitimate foray, and he introduces this narrative he has that he created for his character, and wow, it just blew us away. So it's so much fun. So please go ahead and check it out on www.patreon.com/coffeewithkenobi. We would love to have you. There are also opportunities for t-shirts, coffee mugs, and so much more. If you have any questions, let me know. But otherwise, be sure to go to patreon.com/coffeewithkenobi. Thank you so much. Be sure to try out www.onenationcoffee.com to sample the best coffee in the galaxy and the official brew of Coffee with Kenobi. Four lifelong friends started with this amazing idea that has grown into some of the best coffee you are ever going to have. It smells amazing and tastes even better. They even have a subscription service that is really convenient. So go to www.onenationcoffee.com today and put in the code Kenobi10 to get 10% off your first order. We are back, and I am so excited to hear what Scott and Tom have in store for us. Scott, what is your third one?
Okay, so this is maybe, I don't know, a little sort of a slight moment maybe, but when Han used Luke's lightsaber to cut open the Tauntaun, that like boggled my mind back then, and it still is one of my favorite moments, because there was this thing before Empire came out where it was like, well, only a Jedi can use a lightsaber. Like, you can't use a lightsaber if you don't have, you know, force powers or whatever. And then Han just whipped it out and and used it, and it was just like this really cool moment. But it was sort of like what was happening on screen was stuff that we had done with the action figures as kids. Like you'd play like all these crazy scenarios where Han has the lightsaber, or you know, Chewie is working with Darth Vader for some reason or whatever. And to see Harrison Ford actually wield the lightsaber to help save Luke was really like one of the most memorable moments of the film. And I still kind of get a shiver down my spine a little bit when I see that scene. And I also just enjoy, because you're seeing like the real Han in that moment too, where like the good Han, where he's encouraging Luke, you know, stay with me, buddy, and everything too. Like, there's none of the cynicism of Han in that moment. Well, there is a little bit, but he still cracks a joke, I guess. But yeah, so it's a small moment, but I just love it. I love seeing that.
That's one of my honorable mentions. That's one of my favorite moments in the film too. I mean, just like you said, we did this when we were action figures. What wouldn't it be cool? It also does this beautiful thing where you guys had talked earlier about how this shows that this is a bigger galaxy. It sort of, for a moment, demystifies the forces. It's just not this magical talisman that only Luke can wield. But, right. You know, he can use it just like as a simple tool. All right, this is going to cut this thing open. Boom. Turn it off. Who cares? And I just think it makes it more grounded, which is pretty cool for science fantasy.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, oh, okay, Han even knows how to turn it on. You know, it's like, I still don't know how you turn it on, you know? So, like, yeah. So I think you're right. It does. It grounds it.
I love that.
That's a really interesting one, because as I was watching it with my daughter, who's 11, she made comments. She goes, oh, Han uses Luke's lightsaber. I hadn't thought about it. Like, it's been a few years since she's seen it. And so she'd forgotten that he uses the lightsaber. So I think it's interesting. She made that comment about it.
I'm operating on the same level as your daughter.
Yeah. Well, she's pretty bright when it comes to Star Wars. So that's a good sign for you.
There's hope for you, Scott.
There's still hope.
Well, Dan, you made a nice segue for me, because you said the mysticism of it all. And my number three is, are we ready to move on to my number three?
Absolutely.
My number three is the Force. And kind of, I mentioned this earlier about how much Empire Strikes Back really started answering questions that we didn't know that we had, and where the Force was in Star Wars. In fact, I remember my dad saying at the end of Star Wars, or A New Hope, after the Death Star blows up and he was waking up from his nap, he says to my mom, "What's the Force?" And so Empire Strikes Back really gave me a lot of information about the Force that I didn't know I had coming. And for example, when Luke is hanging upside down in the Wampa's cave, mm-hmm. and he looks over and like, I felt like everyone in the theater, from what my recollection was sitting there. I know my friend and I were sitting there like, is he going to use the Force to get his lightsaber? And sure enough, he does. And so it was like such an exciting moment. And then soon after that, he sees Obi-Wan Kenobi, which totally blew us away while we were sitting there. Like, Obi-Wan's dead. How is he seeing Obi-Wan? And so again, the Force is giving us more information in here. And then of course, he goes to see the Jedi Master, which isn't what we were expecting, you know, a little green guy, Yoda. But what this movie did for me in regards to the Force is it brought to me the worst of the Force and the best of the Force, and tied it all into this wonderful movie where I get to see how conniving and evil the Emperor is with his mechanical empire, and how beautiful and natural, you know, Yoda's teachings are, and how the cave is something just so like beautiful and scary all at the same time, and made me just think. It's probably the movie at this point in my life, when I was 10 years old, I don't think I'd ever thought about anything so hard as the Force in the cave at that point. And so I just go back to that and think, this has got to be one of the biggest moments of the movie, or one of the biggest, not moments, but biggest themes of the movie.
Yeah.
is the Force.
And when Vader's mask explodes and it's Luke's face.
Oh,
I remember turning to my mom and saying, "Who's that?" And she said, "That's Luke." And I remember thinking, "Say, what are you talking about, Willis?" Like, I didn't know what that meant. You know, it is. Yeah, that's, well, there's a lot there too. I mean, that's a wonderful one. You were going to say something, Scott?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to go to the third. My third one, and there's just so much there, Tom. I'm afraid I'm going to open Pandora's box if I start talking about it. That was wonderfully described, yes, too.
Exactly.
The third one for me is the ambient lighting of the carbon freeze chamber. Just that gorgeous orangish blue. And I was just going to say best, but in general, but I already pulled that with Hoth, so I'm not going to do that. This, just the way this thing is lit up. And it's one of the few moments in the Star Wars original trilogy where John Williams doesn't put music in. I'm not talking about when Han is frozen. That's a month's worth of shows right there. I'm talking about the Force is with you, young Skywalker, but you're not a Jedi yet. And you hear Luke gently walking up those steps, which I wish I had steps like that in my basement. I'd probably never leave the basement except to go up and down the stairs. It's just gorgeous. And the silhouette of Vader and Luke looking at each other, which is very powerful. And then all of a sudden the lightsabers are ignited. Luke's first, which I think shows that he brings the aggression. He didn't learn his lesson from the cave. There's so much in that. But it's one of my favorite things when I'm teaching The Empire Strikes Back in my mythology class to my seniors is looking at just that moment in the lighting. And it's very, very powerful. It's pretty much a Star Wars English teacher's dream.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And you're right. There's a lot going on there with Luke's posture and compared to Vader's posture. And Vader is just really, I mean, he's so relaxed about the situation, and Luke is the total opposite. And Vader's got as the fight then begins, the Vader's going one handed, you know, Luke's like giving it all he's got from the very get go, you know,
very brazen.
I'm kind of jumping all. I've got so many different moments. I'm going to actually switch my list a little bit here, because this, Dan, what you were just talking about, it just spurs me to go in this direction. But like the last part of the duel between Vader and Luke, after Luke goes through the window, then we cut back to Leia and Chewie and Lando trying to escape. And then when you come back and they're on the big, whatever that bridge thing is, Luke is kind of, you know, slowly entering this new section inside that chamber, and all of a sudden Darth comes at him so hard, and Vader's posture has now changed, as he's kind of done messing around at this point. And he's hunched over, and he's going double fisted with the saber, and he is swinging like a maniac, and Luke is finished at that point. And it's just like, you can just tell, like, it's just story-wise, you're seeing where things are going for Vader. Like, he's done playing around with this kid, and now it's time to finish up business. And that's exactly what he does. That's another moment that just popped into my head when you were talking about the beginning of the fight. I couldn't help but go to the end of the fight there. It's just awesome.
Well, isn't it cool, too, as Luke goes slowly and slowly out into that little trellis, the ground below him literally and figuratively gets thinner.
Yeah.
His place to stand on, his belief system,
is narrowing down to such a point where he literally and figuratively loses his grip on reality because of the magnitude of the situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is that your fourth one? That's a heck of a good
one. That's my fourth one.
That's great. So this is going to be,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is because we've got so much. The Empire is just a rich film.
I knocked Lobot off my list so I could add that one in.
Lobot. Why don't they have a Lobot in the Ugnaughts like Chewie and Porgs? I don't know.
Of course, he was Lando's aide back then, right? True. I don't know when he got the name Lobot. I guess maybe when the action figure came
Kenner.
Out.
Kenner. Yeah, I think Kenner is the plan for that. Yeah, in a good way. Oh, that's great. This is cool. Tom, what's your fourth one?
Well, I'm just going to continue to build off of that. I'm actually going back to yours, Dan, because one of mine was the carbonite chamber. And so I'll build off of your ambience because that's the one thing I didn't talk about in this. And what I was going to go with in the carbonite chamber was just the sheer power of it. Mm-hmm. And every scene that happens in there just is emitting such a different kind of power. From when they bring Han in to test it, and just everyone, you know, they're all there. You got Boba Fett, you have Vader, you have Lando, then you have the trio of Han and Leia and Chewie, and Chewie begins to rage, and there's so much passion in that moment when Chewie's raging and Han's shouting, stop, stop, you know, and then you have Leia's love and, you know, the ice melting in her, and then Han's coolness of, I know. but at the same time he says that, there's so much fear in his face, which we have yet to see any fear in Han's face. And then Dan, you had mentioned the music silences there, but when those jaws come down, I love that industrial sound, that, that whirring of a motor that comes down and grabs Han's chamber and lifts it out, and they drop it, and it makes that huge thud, and it's just, oh my gosh, I get goosebumps.
And it doesn't vibrate when it hits the ground.
It just thuds. And I just get such goosebumps thinking about and watching that, and just the massive power. And then you have like the opposite. There's so much noise and action in that scene. And then when Luke walks in, it's so quiet, and there's such a menacing silence to it that I just think I love that carbonite chamber so much for all of those reasons. And Dan, I hear you. It's a teacher's dream in analysis.
Oh, and hearing just the two of you, what you're putting into it too. I'm just like, wow, why are you guys available to do some guest speaking when we go to that scene? That's great.
I'm usually available.
Yes, I know. I know where you work, since it's about a rock's throw from where my classroom is.
Right. I could come in on the TV, I guess. And
that's right.
That way.
On the Google machine, we will happily bring you in. So my fourth one, we're gonna change gears a little bit. Where I'm gonna switch over to Yoda. I noticed, and I purposefully did this. I didn't put "I am your father." I didn't put "I love you." I know. I didn't put any of the stuff that I think. You know, of course, we love those things about The Empire Strikes Back. Those are like standards, right? Those are pop culture standards, let alone Star Wars standards. But Yoda's aphorisms and moments of wisdom, I find so beautiful and so refreshing. And like all classics, they are timeless. He comes across, you know, one of the best kept secrets about The Empire Strikes Back, which a lot of people don't necessarily realize, is that when you first see this little green friend that's, you know, tearing up Luke's camp and is fighting with R2-D2, is the most powerful, most respected Jedi master perhaps of all time in the galaxy. You know, good thing it's a Tolkien thing, right? You know, even the smallest person can make a difference. And boy, does Yoda make a difference in Luke's perspective in the galaxy itself. But it's the way that he says the things that he says. You know, the power of, you know, Stuart Freeborn and that design of him. And then, of course, the magnificent Frank Oz. And another testament to the power of Yoda is it does show you that Mark Hamill is a fantastic actor. I mean, he's acting with this small green puppet that doesn't have this pop culture status because it's the first time we've seen Yoda in this little studio.
And it's amazing. And, you know, things like, in fact, I was just talking to a student today about do or do not, there is no try. And they said, hey, what do you think that means? Because I think they were trying to stump me, which I like, because I think that's fun, because that opens up dialogue. And I think that's so important for students. And I said, well, what do you think it means? So he tells me, I'm like, well, Yoda's not really saying don't try. He's really saying, Luke, I know you're full of crap. I know you're not going to try. I know you're not going to give your best. So don't bother. Give your best. Or what are you doing here? You know, why are you wasting time? You know, you maximize your potential and realize things you never thought possible. I mean, it's just Yoda's Yoda-ness.
Yeah. Yeah. Yoda. And, you know, I think when I go back and watch the original Yoda stuff in this movie, and I know people, you know, love the, you know, the Yoda that would come later. I mean, you just ran an article on IGN about Yoda in the Clone Wars, like fighting the whole droid army, kicking their butts. But like, I always felt like, in a way, I would have preferred to have just seen him stay as the guy who just was so powerful that he didn't need to even use physical force.
No, I'd love that, because we didn't really need it. He already was Yoda.
Right, you know, and you kind of see aspects of that of Luke in Last Jedi, I guess, right? In the big,
very much
the big finale that so many people were disappointed by, because I don't think they understood what they were seeing. Maybe, I don't know, but you know, the idea that like the Jedi ultimately is, you know, are beyond that. I mean, I guess you can't have all your Jedi not fight, because then the movie doesn't have any action scenes. But but I kind of wonder if
crouching tiger, hidden corpse, yeah.
Right. But I wonder, you know, I just can't help but wonder sometimes whether it would have been like to just see, you know, that version of Yoda through all, you know, in the prequels and everything, the Yoda who doesn't even need to take it that far and get solve problems other ways.
That spiritual insight that so many of the greatest figures in human history have been at, and he is that. That's great.
I've never thought of it that way, and I really like that idea of maybe we never did need to see Yoda in that fighting aspect. But one thing that I think the prequels bring to me in helping understand Yoda better in Empire Strikes Back is I feel like he's such peace. You know, his Jedi Order failed, and here he is on Dagobah. I don't know. I never really consider him in hiding. It's almost like going home for him. It's so strong in the Force there that I feel like he's, when he talks to Luke and he teaches Luke, he teaches him in a different way than we see him teaching younglings in, you know, on Coruscant in the Jedi Temple. And I feel like it's maybe something that he's learned. And we get to see him, you know, going back. And when we initially watched Empire, we had none of this, you know, notion. But in now watching it, I think, gosh, Yoda has learned so much in his teaching, and he's so much more at peace and probably stronger with the Force. And so, yeah, I love that. I love that idea, though, Scott, of what if we had never seen Yoda pick up a lightsaber and fight? That would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's that challenge you have of, because when you're a kid, I mean, I don't remember exactly how I felt about Yoda when I was a kid. I remember I liked him. I remember I had that cool little Kenner puppet of him. Mm-hmm. I thought he was cool. But as an adult, the Yoda scenes are my favorite parts now because of the intellect and the power. And there's an interesting comparison you did there, Scott, to The Last Jedi, which definitely warrants some future conversation, because that scene you're talking about in The Last Jedi is my favorite sequence in any Star Wars movie ever.
Yeah, that's great.
By landslide. So let's go ahead and take another break. When we come back, we'll have a very, very brief news segment, because we got to get back to some Empire Strikes Back talk. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Greetings. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
Time to talk Harry's Razors, and you know I've been talking about Harry's Razors for a while, and it's because I very much believe in the product. It is an amazing product. The closeness of the shave, it's smooth, it's comfortable, the razor is nice, and it handles really well. It's like got this ergonomic feel. It's hard to explain, but you'll know once you get your hands on one. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors is not an easy decision. So they have created a trial offer. Claim yours by going to harrys.com/CWKfamily. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They know a great shave comes down to great blades made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. And that's why they bought a factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. You have a quality guarantee here that I'm going to share with you. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days and they will give you a full refund. Now let me give you the details of this trial offer. Get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. A weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Listeners of my show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/CWKfamily. Make sure you go to harrys.com/CWKfamily to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to help support the show. All right, we do have one quick news story. Tom is, of course, already with us. We had this fantastic conversation we're having with Scott and Tom. And Tom, you've got something that we need to talk about really quickly that happened in the realm of Star Wars Resistance.
Yes, that's right. This past weekend, Star Wars released a featurette for Star Wars Resistance titled The Aces. This is a fantastic teaser breakdown of the characters of Resistance with a few words from the voices of each character. Myrna Velasco, who voices Tora Doza, describes her as one with childlike wonder. She brings the spunk to the group, that's for sure. And Dave Filoni describes the character of Hype Faison as the first character he's created around a person. Hype is the showman and makes no mistake that he pilots for the recognition of it. The featurette confirms that Steven Stanton is on this project playing Griff Halloran, a former TIE fighter pilot. Isn't that great? TIE fighter pilot looking for his last great battle. And Freya Fenris, talk about a great name right there. Freya Fenris, played by Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, is the icy cold pilot who's hyper-logical and expects the most out of each in the group. And finally, Bo Kival is the daring pilot who flies the prototypes and takes his piloting to the extreme. The story takes place before war breaks out, and each member has to find its place in it as the First Order bears down. Now, Donald Faison, who, by the way, is the character Hype Faison is based upon, states that this story is about pilots, racing, espionage, and everything you ever wanted from a Star Wars story. Wow.
And how great is it that, Dave does want scrubs. He can't say you don't want no scrubs because look who's playing that character, right? How cool is that? I was quite excited about the scene that Steven Stanton is a cast regular. Of course, he was AP5 in Rebels, other voices, and then he was naturally Tarkin in the Clone Wars and in Star Wars Rebels. But it's cool. I mean, Scott, what are you noticing? You're out in the forefront of this even more than we are. By far, because you're working with IGN. Tell me what you're hearing from people about Star Wars Resistance and the reception to these two trailers we've seen.
IGN has, kind of a specific audience in terms of demo. And sometimes it's hard to, until the show is actually out and people have seen it, it's hard to get a read on just what fans really think, because they jump to conclusions just based on, a 30-second teaser or whatever.
You're kidding. Is that a spoiler?
Yeah. From what I'm seeing on IGN, it seems like a lot of people are complaining about the animation style. In my experience, this is kind of what a lot of people just do before they see the final product of something.
That's anxiety. It's like fan anxiety.
Yeah, I think you're right. Oh my God, Ben Affleck is cast as Batman. That's ridiculous. And then like a year later, they would die on the Ben Affleck Hill. They die on the Batfleck Hill. Heath Ledger's another example. Even you go back to the Michael Keaton Batman, actually, they hated him when he was cast. And that was before the internet, of course. So I kind of don't put too much credence in what I'm seeing in comment sections and things like that. It's always kind of wait and see until people have actually seen the show. But I don't have really, I think you guys are probably more up on this production and everything than I am. I'm actually not expert when it comes to the animated stuff. I love the Clone Wars, but I'm not an expert in it. I love the Tarkovsky. Tarkovsky's I loved his Clone Wars, which I know were not canon or anything, but I was a big fan of those. But I actually have to sort of cede the center seat to you guys on this one, because I'm definitely not as knowledgeable as you are. Looks cool to me. I can say that.
I agree, and knowing that it is geared towards kids, whether I was a dad or wasn't, I still would be excited because it's something new Star Wars that I get a chance to check out. And
right.
I was actually telling someone today, you know, sometimes people say, oh, he likes Star Wars, so he likes everything. Actually, that's not really true. I think I have a more discerning eye because I know what Star Wars means to me. And I have a certain, you know, thing that I appreciate. I obviously like much more of it than there are things that don't work for me as well. But I mean, that we're Star Wars fans. I mean, that's kind of the part and parcel of it. I think it looks promising. I think it looks fun. If this is something that I can bring my 5-year-old into the franchise even more, I don't see how that could possibly be bad.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems with fandom in general is just that, like, very often, and I'm not sure that this is representative of, you know, fandom as a whole, or if it's just that vocal minority, but people are afraid of something that's different, as we're saying. Mm-hmm. And so, like, ultimately, what they really want, if you get down to the core of their argument, is they want, like, you know, they want Empire Strikes Back remade 20 times. They don't want new iterations on a thing. And where I'm sitting as a fan, that's the exact opposite of what I want. I want new versions. I want new ideas. I want new designs. I want new characters. I want new stories. So, you know, that's kind of what it comes down to. But again, a lot of times what happens is once people actually see the thing, then they fall in love with it anyway. So
and get Chopper tattoos.
How did you know?
You have your camera on. One of my favorite ironies of life is that for some people who complain that The Force Awakens was too much like A New Hope, now they're upset that the others aren't like The Empire Strikes Back.
Right, exactly.
Irony's delicious. Tom, that's great. I would love to talk about this some more, but we got some more Empire Strikes Back to talk about. So let's go ahead and take another break and come back, and we'll finish out our show. And just to give you a bit of a tease here, I've got 6 honorable mentions, and I had 2 when the show started. But what you guys were talking about brought it into my mind.
Wow.
So let's take a break. We'll come back and finish out our look at the top 5 things we love about The Empire Strikes Back. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee, tea, or me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's Coffee with Kenobi.
It is not too late to go to onenationcoffee.com and set your subscription up so you can receive some of the best coffee in the galaxy. It is definitely the official brew of Coffee with Kenobi. And once you go to your mailbox and you smell that delicious package of coffee, it will sell you all the way. I know that sounds crazy, but trust me, every time I know I'm getting my order in the mail, I run to that mailbox and I probably look like a goofball, but it's worth it because the coffee smells amazing and tastes even better. So be sure to go to www.onenationcoffee.com today, order a bag, set up a coffee subscription, and don't forget to put in Kenobi10 in the code so you can get 10% off your first order. Mouse Fan Travel is the official travel agency of Coffee with Kenobi. Whether you're going to Disney World, Disneyland, or taking a cruise, the Mouse Fan Travel Agency is the place you want to go. They have signature service and expert advice to help clients maximize their vacation time and dollar. They help your family enjoy everything the Disney theme parks and cruise lines have to offer, help plan every detail, and they will share invaluable tips. What ride should I go to first? What's the best restaurant? Where do I park? How do I get places? They're going to set you up and they're going to take care of you, and you're going to feel like you are a star because they are awesome. So be sure to go to www.mousefantravel.com today and let them know Coffee with Kenobi sent you. We're back and we are on our last one, sort of, but we are going to go to Scott for his 5th one. Scott, what do you have for us?
Well, I went sort of granular on most of my choices so far, so I'm going to go a little bigger on this one, and I'm just going to go with Luke Skywalker. Luke Skywalker as a character and his sort of arc throughout the film is, you know, it's not a typical action hero sort of thing that goes down with him. He's doing everything he's supposed to do. You know, he went from the farm boy dupe of the first movie who became an accidental hero. In this one, he is more seasoned and he's starting things off in a kind of a, you know, mid-level command position. But at the same time, he is trying to pursue the Jedi thing. And he does what he should do. You know, he goes and he finds Yoda. He does the training and everything. He does what is the right thing, which is to go save his friends. But he loses in the end. Luke actually loses. And I'm not sure that when I first saw this movie, if I had ever seen a story like that unfold. The fact that your main character gets beaten down so badly, he loses in his mission. He's unsuccessful in saving his friend. He gets the worst news of his life that his dad is Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, it just rocks your mind. And it's still so effective even now when you know it's coming. And it's kind of the I Am Your Father thing is kind of like, sort of like the ending of Planet of the Apes, perhaps, where everyone knows it now. But even if when you know it's coming, it's still such a gut punch when it does come.
Yeah.
I was always, so many people say they were Han fans. I mean, I love Han and I love Luke and I always did, but I always gravitated more to Luke for some reason. I wasn't really a Han Solo guy as much. I don't know if it was because I was more interested in mythology and stuff like that when I was a kid. But for me, I was a Luke guy, and what Luke goes through in this movie was just like, yeah, it was like crazy, and it still is. It's just there's so much there, and there's so many levels to it as well.
We're very similar. I've always been a Luke guy too, and mostly because of this film.
Yeah,
you know, the lightsaber, the mysticism, the mythology. But yeah, oh, I agree. Good, that's awesome. Very good. Tom, your next one.
Oh man, I'm really tossed between two of them here. So I'm gonna go with this one because I have more question about it than I do. So I have observation, and then I'm gonna put out there: am I right? How does that sound?
I like
so
it.
It's the lightsaber duel. Mm-hmm. And as I was watching the lightsaber duel this time, I was really looking for the analysis of it. And to me, it broke down into four different parts. And so this is what I came up with. And so I'm just curious if anyone makes anything of this, because I've only had a couple of days to think about it. And so when the fight starts, and Scott, you described this scene, or maybe Dan, you did, I don't remember, but it's, you know, like Luke walking up in the battle beginning on the steps of the carbonite chamber. And so I saw this as Vader has a plan. There's something Vader wanted out of this, and he didn't get his initial plan, and that was to be cunning and tricky and get Luke into the carbon, freeze him, take him back to the Emperor. That was step one. It didn't work. So step two happens, and this is where he uses the power of the Force to try to take Luke. And so they're standing in that, I don't know what the room is, it's some sort of control room. And instead of fighting Luke in melee with those lightsabers, he starts throwing stuff at Luke using the Force and putting up his power, because it seems like Luke's good. Luke has been taught the ways of the lightsaber, but maybe not so much in the power of the Force. And so he takes this route with him. That doesn't work. So then on that railing or whatever the next scene is, right before he cuts off his hand, Vader goes to step three, and that's just to use brute force. Mm-hmm. Scott, you mentioned in the opening, Vader's using one-handed lightsaber technique and brings two in it from time to time. But in this scene, he's using two hands on the lightsaber, and he's just trying to browbeat Luke down, bull rush him out onto that edge. In there, you know, he's taking wild swings, so much so that Luke is able to get in that shot on his shoulder, because he's just so raging at this point. And that doesn't work. He gets Luke down, he cuts off his hand, and he still doesn't get him to submit. So then he goes to what at the time I thought was lies and deceit by saying, "I am your father," as his final act. And that even fails. And so I'm wondering what anyone thinks, whether the two of you or someone gives feedback on this show. What do you think of that analysis? Was that Vader's plan, or am I making this up out of nowhere?
Scott, why don't you? I got plenty to say, but I want to hear what Scott thinks.
Sure. I have never thought of it that way before, but it makes a lot of sense. And also what occurs to me is that not only does Luke fail, but Vader fails. Everyone fails in a way, right? Mm-hmm. But I like the idea, Tom. It makes sense. I mean, Vader is a seasoned and experienced guy, so I would expect that he would go in there with a plan. It makes a lot of sense to me. Sure, I buy it.
I like that it's segmented into four distinct acts. I wish there were five, because then it would be Shakespearean, because Shakespeare plays five acts. But what I like about this is, I think what you see is, at first, there really isn't much of a plan. I'm Darth Vader. You're not. And you're the Emperor's prize. And if I can figure out a way to get you on my team and finally break free and be my own ruler, cool. But otherwise, I'm just going to freeze you because you can't compete with me. And then when he gets in that chamber, we have one of the great jump scares. It's more like, this is peacocking. You know, I'm just going to throw stuff at you because, check this out, you have no idea how powerful I am. And then it's pure brutality. It's that D&D barbarian rage, right?
Yeah, right.
That he goes into. And then at the end, it becomes psychology. I mean, you can tell he's been trained by the Emperor. I like that. I like the breakdown there. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, for sure. Can you guys explain to me something I've always been confused by? And this is a quick aside, but mm-hmm. when he says that together they can rule the galaxy as father and son, the Emperor has foreseen this. Why, if the Emperor has foreseen it, why would he be down with that?
I mean, I've always taken that as the Emperor has foreseen how powerful Luke is, and he's also kind of fudging things. He knows the Emperor knows how powerful Luke is going to be. But whether the Emperor thought, I said, hey, I think you guys are going to overthrow me, I don't think the Emperor would say that. I think this is Vader trying to manipulate and use anything he can.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Yeah, I've always seen those lines as being manipulative. And,
yeah.
And
the sociopath always lies to sell their. I don't think Vader's a sociopath, but you know, that's manipulation 101.
Okay.
Good call. My last one is the evolution of both Han and Luke as characters. One of the things that, and I'm going to try to keep this positive because that's what we do on the show anyway. One of the reasons I think Empire is the strongest of the original trilogy is because I think both of these actors as characters and as actors are at their peak. I think Han is by far the most complex in The Empire Strikes Back. I think Luke clearly different than he was in New Hope, while still having elements of that, is clearly going to a different level of consciousness and competence and enlightenment, but he still is very, very flawed and very, very proud. And that's an archetype that goes all the way back to the Odyssey, you know, over 3,000 years ago or so. It's quite lovely that they continue to find ways to connect these mythologies together. The things that they go through, the fact that they're not on screen very much together, but they're very much brothers. And, you know, you feel the pain that Luke might be in when Han realizes, you know, you've set a trap for Luke and we're the bait. And that rage that Han feels. But there's a whole other thing I could say about the carbon freeze, which I'll save for another time too. But I just think as characters, they grow to a place. And I feel very confident in saying that the reason that so many of us love Luke Skywalker and Han Solo is because of The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it is amazing how little time they have together, isn't it, on screen? They're barely in this movie together. The main cast is only in, I think, one scene together in the medical bay.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Wow.
Which is why it's more special when you see them together in Return of the Jedi, because even then it's few and far between. And we didn't even get that in The Force Awakens, unfortunately.
I know. That's really, I think, the biggest disappointment about the new films is that you never got to see the three of them together.
Yep. I totally agree. I totally agree with you. All right. So I have, like I said, a laundry list of honorable mentions. I'm not going to even go into them. I'm just going to state them.
Okay.
Do you guys have any?
I Sure, I can roll 20 off. I'll name a couple.
Go ahead, sure.
You go first.
Okay. I've got the Imperial March.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember hearing that on the radio and not knowing it was called the Imperial March, and thinking, oh, I love this. This is that new Star Wars movie. The Cave, which I talked about on StarWars.com. I've talked about a lot on the show. The bounty hunter scenes, I'm not really a bounty hunter guy, but that sequence where they're all standing up there and there's Bosk and you, the first time you see Boba Fett on screen, great. Oh, yeah. The wizardry of the Falcon, one of my favorite aspects of Star Wars is the Falcon, which is not a character because it's not sentient, but it is a wonderfully awesome ship.
That was a dig.
Very good.
Yeah. Oh, man. Han using a lightsaber, and then the gross out moments in the jump scares when Han slices open the Tauntaun belly and the shrimp comes out or whatever is actually in there. You know, the Minox, the Vader jumping out towards the end of the lightsaber fight, all that stuff. I just think that's
one
of the many reasons I love Empire.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And that's all I got for now.
All right, real quick, I'm just going to, off the top of my head, name a few things. The medical frigate, I love the design of the medical frigate. That thing looked so weird and out there first time I saw it. I can't believe we didn't talk about this, really, but the entire asteroid scene is, you know, we talked about 3PO in relation to it, but like that sequence is just magical. Luke's lightsaber, I love so much, just the actual hilt of the thing, you know, just spent years trying to build one myself, and now you can just buy one. Leia leaning up against Chewie when Han's saying, you know, Han tells Chewie, you know, you have to take care of the princess now.
Yes.
And then the way Leia kind of like sinks into like Chewie's kind of care in that moment. And then also I have to just mention R2-D2 because it's R2-D2. That's pretty much it for now, I guess.
Hey, can't argue with any of those. Yeah, for sure. Tom, you got any quick ones?
Those are great. Yeah, you guys hit some of mine, but Boba Fett. I just love Boba Fett and he kind of changed the way I looked at characters in the movie. Vader's Star Destroyer, the massiveness of it and how shocking that was on the big screen. The raising of the X-Wing out of the swamp by Yoda was a powerful, powerful scene, I remember. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the stacking of rocks, the simplicity of the Force in learning and how that theme rolls through from Rebels to The Force Awakens and Rey and so many different places. The simplicity of just stacking rocks.
And it's very scriptural too, I think. There's a lot of biblical mythology in that. And you said rocks and rolls through. Thank you for that.
I did.
I didn't want to say we were on such a roll. I didn't want to interrupt you. Very good. Well, hey, Scott Kalura and Tom Groves, thank you both so much for being on Coffee with Kenobi this week for show number 143. Scott, where can everybody find you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
Oh, you can look for me on Twitter at Scott Kalura. That's Scott, ScottCollura. And, you know, we kind of alluded to it earlier, but I had started this crazy project where I was tweeting every shot from The Empire Strikes Back, like literally every shot in order. And I kind of got sidetracked as the summer got busy and I haven't gotten back to it recently, but I am still planning to revisit it. I was last seen on somewhere on Hoth. And I do plan on finishing that project. So if you want, check that out on my Twitter feed.
That sounds right. Cause I love when you do that because there's a lot of cool little nuggets and behind scenes stuff. Plus your love of that movie just shines through. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And Tom, where can everyone find you by chance?
Well, every week on Coffee with Kenobi, of course, with the news.
I love that show.
Right?
Yeah.
Did you remember that? Yeah. I am also on Twitter at Draftline. Love to touch base with people there and hear what you think about the Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker breakdown. On Twitter, at Draftline, DraftLine. And then you can drop me a line at TomG@CoffeeWithKenobi.com.
Let's go ahead and take our last break. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are the podcast you're looking for. This is...
we get to email, I want to thank our CWK sponsors, One Nation Coffee, Harry's Razors, and Mouse Fan Travel. Please support them the way they support our podcast. And remember to listen to new and archive shows of Coffee with Kenobi wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, Spreaker, Overcast, Blog Talk Radio, Player FM, or our website, www.coffeewithkenobi.com. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, and Tumblr, and we'd love for you to check us out there. Also, be sure to listen to our CWK family of shows, including Legends Library, Rebels Reactions, Comics with Kenobi, and Lattes with Leia. Please leave a review for each of their shows as well. Be sure to subscribe to each of them individually, as they all have their own feeds now. A big thank you to Scott Kalura and Tom Gross for joining me today to talk about the five things that we love about Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back. Of course, and I'm a broken record, I understand that, but there's so many things we love about this movie, about all these Star Wars movies. So it's great to have them on and to pick their brains, and I really want to hear what you love. Give me your top five for either Star Wars A New Hope or for The Empire Strikes Back, so I can share them on a future show. If you want to hear more from me besides Weekly on Coffee with Kenobi, I do have a monthly podcast with Jim Hill, part of the Jim Hill Media Network, that is called Looking at Lucasfilm, which you can find on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you can find podcasts. Again, it's on the Jim Hill Media Network. You can also find me on Twitter at Mr. Zehr, M-R-Z-E-H-R, as well as on the other places that I mentioned for Coffee with Kenobi and social media. And you can find my writing occasionally on StarWars.com, where I am an official blogger there. And I also contribute to IGN about Star Wars, comic books, and all other kinds of things. I just wrote an article that was published the other day about Star Wars Ambush, the first televised airing of Star Wars The Clone Wars. It's about Yoda and the clones. I'm sure you remember it. It's a fantastic episode, which gives some nice insights into Yoda, what makes him tick, his reverence for the clones. And when I say reverence, I don't mean he puts them up as deities. I mean he puts them up as individuals that are members of the collective force. And I think it's very powerful and philosophical. It also shows the beginning of the fall of the Jedi. Of course, episode 2 takes care of that. But this is where you're able to color more inside the lines and give a little more to what is going on, add a little bit more context, which I think is a great thing. Thanks again for joining us each and every week. And don't forget to check out www.patreon.com/coffeewithkenobi to help support our show, as well as get access to podcasts not heard anywhere else. There are also t-shirts, coffee mugs, and much more. Again, that is our CWK pour-over destination, where you can hear us talking about all kinds of geek topics. And of course, Star Wars comes up, as well as other things that I think you might be interested in. So be sure to check it out and let me know if you have any questions. Have a great week, everybody. I'm hoping it's going to start cooling down here. The story is that Friday we're going to get in the 60s in Central Illinois. So I'm very happy about that. It will be outside quite a bit, getting on those Star Wars sweatshirts and long sleeve shirts and getting ready for a fantastic fall. Wonderful spending time with you. Thank you so very much. This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.